The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Take the Stock. It's Monday, the 21st of August, 2023, and it's a dreadful day in the market. I'm joined by Cashmere John. What you got today, John? Cashmere? Or is it Cashmere from a charity shop, which is
T-shirt weather.
Yes, it's nice weather there, isn't it? Very nice. Yeah. In fact, isn't being reflective of the markets. Let's have a quick look straight away at the big stocks, the FTSE 100. Now, risers there is BP, Tesco, Intercontinental Hotels. But if we click on the fallers, look at this. Taylor Wimpey, Persimmon, Berkeley Homes, Barrett,
yeah.
Rightmove. So it's all the house builders. And we're going to be discussing this because is a house price crash imminent? This is what City AM has said this morning after Rightmove have come out with asking prices dropping. And also, I suppose, what's the main driver for sector peers? It's Crest Nicholson, isn't it? The news from them today.
Yeah, really horrible profit warning.
Yeah.
Horrible profit
warning. And in fact, it is. It's saying things like, and did you see that? I was looking at Crest Nicholson. So it's trading update. But they said conditions for the housing market have worsened during the summer of this year. Pricing has remained resilient in a market with limited supply and a few distressed sellers. But the economic uncertainty is deterring prospect, move at home, all that stuff.
Yeah, I wrote something about this on the site.
Yeah, this is. Did you cover the old SPOW? SPOW, sales outlet per week.
Sales per outlet. Yeah, it's that's a big fall. That's a big drop.
Yeah.
You know, they've talked about, you know, a significant decline in the level of activity in the housing market, which is kind of what you'd expect given the sort of, the sort of interest rate backdrop. The economic backdrop, the withdrawal of they point to the withdrawal of Help to Buy, so you know government support for first time buyers, so that's had an effect. All looking pretty horrible there, and I guess this is what we were talking about before when I said you know there is the potential for further unpleasant surprises. This is the unpleasant surprise, therefore it's no surprise to see the whole sector dragged down with it.
Let's have a Crest Nicholson. There's a chart here. By all means, hit that subscribe button. And if you could do, put a comment below. We've got a couple of comments there. But this Crest Nicholson, look at that. It's a horrible-looking chart. And it's very messy. But you see, we hit the sort of lows there in October. Rallied a little bit. But most house builders, we're out of the woods a bit in there. Because there was thought back then that the Bank of England may be near peak rates then. But then, rolled over. And now, look, back. Lower than the previous lows there back in October, almost right on level. It was went down this morning, come back up, but hitting those October lows.
Well, I think there was a little bit of optimism back then as well. After the sort of disastrous mini budget, the quasi Kwarteng and Liz Truss catastrophe, that the grown ups are back in the room and everything was going to be okay again.
How naive we were to have some optimism back then.
It's just the thing is, you know, it's changed the guard. What's different in reality? The politicians, a lot of this is out of their control. And no matter how much Rishi wants to promise that he can halve inflation, and really, that's not a lot to do with him.
Well, he did. I know exactly. He's like, promising that. You can't promise that. I mean, he was a chancellor as well, wasn't he? It's like, you must know that. And what I heard him saying was, thing is, we have to tackle inflation because if we don't tackle inflation, interest rates will stay, will be high and mortgages will be high. I thought, well, that's down to the Bank of England.
You don't have
to put interest rates up if you don't want to. It's like,
Well, I suspect he was only promising something that he knew was sort of on the way anyway. A lot of the inflationary pressures were technically going to come out of the system a year later. But as I've said before, I just think inflation volatility is what we need to get used to.
Yeah. Okay. AI investors have been on my holidays all last week, so missed these sessions. Glad to be back. Thank you very much. And another nice one, actually, on Friday evening. I really hope you both keep this format going. It's the best 30 minutes a retail investor can spend each day. Essentially, you cover everything one needs to know. A huge thank you. That's from John. That's not from you, John. If it was from you, it would be quite funny.
It's all your own book.
Exactly. Pat yourself on the back. Now, Bash says, I call it this, what's the point of investing in AIM? If I would have kept my money in Apple and BP, I would have had over one bagged by now, but yet I've got into AIM stocks for the multiple bags, yet I'm 60% down. Why would anybody want to get back into the UK small caps when you look at how strong the American market is alone?
Yeah, yes. Funny enough, I was looking at the American market this morning. It's very expensive now.
Yeah, exactly. That's why. So, it's the value you missed it. I mean, the thing is, John, I hope, Bash, I hope you haven't got out of, gone into the American market now, because they're probably hitting their highs and they're rolling over.
Yeah.
And the aim, you know, there's a lot more upside. It's like risk reward, isn't it? It's what you want to achieve. If you want to, you know, multiple returns on your money, you've got to go to a bit riskier. But in downturns, they're more volatile. They will fall faster and further than big cap stocks, but they'll rise quicker. I mean, 60% you said you're down in portfolio. You know, I've seen many AIM stocks do that in a day. Now, Apple won't do that a day, or BP won't do that a day. So, so you can't. And you're gonna, if you can stomach the volatility that comes with the reward you want, then that's it. You have to stick in there sometimes, you know. And companies, but you know, do due diligence. But like I said, be careful. You know, you're swapping out and going to the big caps when they've had a good run already.
Well, market timing is notoriously hard. You know, it's very easy to do the wrong thing at the wrong time. Even the experts, you know, a lot of, you know, very 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 good investors will avoid trying to time the market. What's the time in the market rather than timing the market is the mantra. And obviously you want to sort of, you know, think about your geo allocations as you're going. And I've always, you know, as I've said before, I think you've got to have exposure to, you know, a broad church of equities from around the world. You know, the US has been the place to be, but the research I was looking at is from Edison, and it's actually quoting the Bankers Investment Trust. You know, they've you know, on a number of indicators. You know, the US economy has been strengthening, but there are signs that it's slowing. The savings boom that supported the stock market there is pretty much over. You know, earnings growth relative to valuations is lagging, and valuations relative to real yields are very very unattractive. So a lot of investment trust managers are reducing their exposure, their allocation to the US at the moment. So just bear that in mind.
Yeah, and also,
whereas the UK is still very, very, very cheap.
Yeah, that's it. And if you want to get that 6% back, I doubt you'll do that in BP and Apple from now. I know from this level, Apple will not go. Let's look at Apple top. But you know, you won't get the 6% back on that. But if you look for good small caps, micro caps, then maybe you could possibly get that back within, you know, if your timing's right, within days, weeks, months. So that's why. I mean, it's very high. It's very hard. I wouldn't have done half as well, not even a quarter as well, probably, in my portfolio the last 10 years if I'd stuck to big caps. But of course, there was a bull market, but I took a big hit, you know, in the last 2 years. But nevertheless, I'm still significantly more up than I would have been if I'd held on to big caps. And I think you can generate very good, you know, meaningful sums from smaller micro caps if you're in the right stocks at the right times. But it's just about the volatility. On a downturn, they will hurt a lot harder. On the upside as well, but on the bull markets, they really rally very strongly.
I think with small caps, the approach is, you know, you have to do the due diligence. You have to understand, you know, the numbers, the financing, and you know, how much cash small companies, you know, need to get through to profitability, which is, you know, a lot of them are pre-profit. Pre-profit's massively out of favor anyway. So what you should be looking for is stuff that has a good cash runway that can get there. And I mean, the other thing is just try not, you know, got to be really careful not to fall for stories. There are a lot of great narratives on companies on AIM, but, you know, turning that story into a commercial success is often, you know, much more difficult than
But also, I do like a smattering of story stocks, because they can rally. A good example of this, and I believe it's going to be a very good company. I did a video on the weekend of Lung Life, and I've got some shares in that. That's done over 100% in the last 2 weeks. And why has it done that? Because I believe it was massively undervalued. It was sold off massively, you know, down at cash levels. And yet they've got a pivotal study coming out, and they are sort of, their positive predictive value for lung cancer is 89%, way above the 60% of CT scans. And they're just going through this phase now. And so it's going to be sort of generating revenue end of this year. And it's rallied very strongly. And so it's nice to have a smattering of those within your portfolio as well as sensible stocks, because it can really change your feeling, your sentiment. I feel a lot more positive. And in fact, Destiny Farm has done well in the last few weeks as well. Both pre-revenue stocks, you know, that I wouldn't have, if I was a sensible investor just going for profits, I wouldn't have got those returns off those stocks. So, but I've also got, and in fact, my sensible thing, my fund, which is my FTSE 100 and 250, it's taking a bit of a hammering. It's like, what's going on there? But I'm not worried about that because the longer term I know is paid dividends and they'll bounce back. So I'm not too worried about that, you know. But yeah, it's hard to say. I would say be careful because I've had the same. I've hit hard on the downturn in macro caps, but they can bounce back very quickly as well. You know,
yeah, absolutely. We've seen a lot of that. Yeah.
Okay, let's look on the front page of Vox here. What's Redex? Gains FDA orphan drug status for potential IPF treatment. What is IPF?
Idiopathic pulmonary. What did it say there? I can't remember.
Fibrosis.
Fibrosis. Yeah, that's basically lung scarring. It affects quite a few people. I mean, Redex's strategy is built around treatment areas or neglected treatment areas. You know, rare diseases, basically. So you get a lot of these things where there aren't really very many, effective treatments but they are significant markets. But the reason there aren't many, treatments is because they're kind of too small. They're not the big areas. So Redex does a lot of this stuff and it got, given orphan drug status for its IPF treatment, which means it's got, essentially some support from the FDA over in the US. Yeah. I mean, you know what? I haven't looked at this company much in the past, but I sort of have a look at its website and what it does, which I think is really good. This is a really nice way of communicating with shareholders. It actually has all of its treatments and what they do and what sort of commercial milestones that they expect or commercial status they have and what stage of the sort of development pipeline they're at, whether it's a research project or phase two or whatever. And so you can see that all at a glance. It's really, really good.
Let's look at that. Okay. Yeah, I like this because the one they're talking about at the moment, that's in phase 2A, isn't it? I think if I remember that right.
That's correct. Rock 2.
Our pipeline.
This is really, really good. I don't always see this.
I don't like to keep mentioning it, but Destiny Pharma is a similar kind of thing.
Yeah, they should because working out where companies are at what stage they're at in terms of their development pipeline is sometimes hard to do if this information isn't presented easily and readily. Redex is had some commercial success. You can see there from the bottom right, it's licensed treatment or development projects to Astra or Jazz Pharma.
Jazz Pharmaceuticals, they sold to them.
They know how to do it. They know how to get products, into the big boys.
They've even got a porcupine inhibitor.
Yes, I've no idea what a porcupine inhibitor is. There's a lot of science here that I must admit.
You need to inhibit those because they're quite dangerous animals, I think. So
But a lot of oncology, as you can see there. Really, quite a good pipeline. They've got plenty of cash as well. I imagine having something like that.
$30 million plus. How much?
$30 million plus.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, it's good. So that's, I quite like that. Look at that. I mean, at the moment, I said, I always look for the sort of break the 50-day moving average and then previous highs. And it has done that. These are sort of previous highs here. So maybe that's the end of a downtrend, maybe. So maybe keep an eye on that. So, okay, cool. So that's Redex on there. What else are you on the front page? You've got your Crest Nicholson, Guild Esports. It's been a tough time for esports games. I don't know why it seemed to slow down. The heat seemed to come out of that. And in fact, a victim of that was being Gfinity, which I held. It's one of the stocks so I shouldn't have taken a loss on, but I did. Guild, that's sort of what they've done. I mean, it does seem like the...
They've launched a new team for one of their first-person shooter games.
Look at that again. Look at that. It's come IPO'd at, 8p, and now it's done at 0.59. That can be very painful. That's why you need, when you have pre-revenue or loss income, you need a big cash runway in these markets, definitely.
Yeah.
It's
an interesting Counter-Strike. That's the game. It's an interesting company. This is a rapidly expanding market. What did they say? There's Victor put some stats in this piece. Counter-Strike's biggest competitive tournament, which is in Paris, had average viewership of 507,000 across this tournament, and peaking 1.5 million visitors concurrently. So there are big sponsorship opportunities here, which is how you.
Do you say people are peeking at it?
Peeking. Well, they watch it. It's a spectator.
You mean the peeking of the actual... Yeah. Yeah, sorry. Peaking. I thought you meant 500,000 people just peeking at it.
Peak viewership. Okay. Yeah. What they're doing is they sign lots of deals with commercial sponsors. Yeah. And as this industry grows, that will hopefully grow, that revenue stream will grow as well. And, you know, eventually they'll start making money. I've never watched esports. It's not something that interests me.
No.
But there are lots of people that are interested. So
Yeah, absolutely. My two kids right now are playing on Fortnite, probably upstairs. That's what they're doing. Even there's nice weather outside, so they don't care about the weather outside. They care about the game activity inside. Balascura, Paul's on interviews, and he was the two guys from Balascura, Bob Rooker and VP of Bob Farrick. Two Bobs, double Bobs. Bob.
Yeah, and, following their news last week.
Yeah.
Big, big pre-order.
It's still above that little breakout, which is quite nice. You see today, you know, it went to go back into that box, but it's back above that. So that's quite nice, right on the 200-day moving average. So maybe we've seen the end of a downtrend there, which is good news. What else is there? Oh, by the way, obviously we've seen that Stuart Gall worth looking at, rising today nicely on that. In fact, that's an interesting chart. I put a lot of marks on this chart. Intelligent ultrasound. Do you see, it's sort of... that box there, that was where it's broken down, come back up, and it's a little bit of selling congestion there, but I like it's above the 200 moving average there, staying above that, it's quite nice. And they're doing quite well, so a local company doing well. Most followed is Tungola Resources, South African resource company.
It's quite big. Yeah, look at this. Coal mining, I think.
Yeah, coal mining. You've got two things, haven't you? South Africa and coal mining.
Yeah, they're not a combination that appeals much to me, I have to say.
Yeah, exactly. If you're into a bit of risk, and that's why you think, well, and the thing is, you will see people saying, oh, look at the profits it's churning out. This is like on a PE of 2 or 3. And you think, well, yeah, but that's all it's ever going to be rated on. You're never going to get a PE of 5, 6, 10 on that because of jurisdiction and what they're mining, you know?
Yeah.
So you get the valuation multiples are really small. So there's no point trying to compare a miner in South Africa was like a miner in Canada or Australia because they're not to get the multiples because just the safety of the jurisdiction.
Yeah, also there is that ESG risk that still hangs over, you know, companies like this. They are increasingly shunned by you know, many, many elements of the institutional investment industry and of course private investors as well. So you know, whatever you think of the environmental movement and ESG, it is having an impact on companies' ability to raise finance, and it is having an impact on how they're rated by the stock market. And there's an example for you.
Yeah. All followed Long Life. I've seen the chart of Long Life. It's gone nuts. It literally had very little volume. And look at that.
Mm.
So it's gone up in the last few days. But that's the day. So,
crikey, that's a quick 10-bagger, isn't it?
Mm,
near enough.
What else we got there? So Tirupati, no, in fact, Harland & Wolff is the most read, and all that's about is their gas storage facility, which for a long time has been, you know, besieged with sort of, regulation and protests saying we don't want this here. But you realise we need gas storage country. So I think now they've relooked at it after the Ukraine invasion, you know, the gas prices went through the roof, whereas we haven't got any. I think it's just Centrica now has the rough storage.
But it's not very big. Rough is not very big.
I think about 10 days worth of gas storage they can put there. That's it.
Yeah.
This country has, I mean.
Yeah.
A review on the Thursday, what is that? A week on Thursday.
Worth looking at, that'll be.
If they get the green light for that, that should see the share price move a little bit.
Could be big news.
Yeah. What is
it? It sounded relatively positive whenever I've spoken to the management there, and when they put stuff out about this review before. It all sounds reasonably positive.
Fingers
crossed.
As far as this is interesting, Truefin. Now, Truefin, I own business shares in Truefin. I like them for a long time, but the business they're selling is not what I've ever liked, really. Just to explain what they're about. It's very boring. Virtus is basically a specialist lender to independent financial advisors looking to grow through acquisitions. So they provide funds for them. It's a very boring business, but it was quite stable. But they've agreed to sell it for 5.9 million. Truefin will get 3.2 of that. And just to look at the last three businesses they have now, I quite like a lot because you've got Oxygen, they're a provider of early payments. And I think they're one of the biggest providers to local authorities. If you're paying early payments to get rewarded in some way, money off, and they've got the software there. And that has like literally 90% of its revenue booked for the next 5 years. They turned down an offer for that, 26 million in December. Because they reckon, listen, no, we know where this business is going to be. They never lose any clients, basically, in Oxygen. But the other two parts of the business are Satargo, which is it deals with Lloyds, the bank, and Sage. And that's a huge grower, and PlaceStack. Two very exciting businesses, and one very sensible grower there. So I quite like that now. They've got the cash to maybe plough into the other two businesses. Virtus, to me, was always a bit of a boring part. It's okay, but it's not going to blow the doors off. So they've got a bit of cash there. So that's that on Truefin, quite like that. Audioboom, someone asked us to look at Audioboom.
Yeah.
They cement their interest gone down today. That must be annoying to Michael Tobin.
There's not a lot of news in this statement.
No.
Really? I mean, we know they're doing well. They had some numbers, when were they, back in mid-July.
I got my spreadsheet here because I did look at it. I looked at this and the revenue went down for the half year from 40 to 31, and even gross profit they were profitable. And then it turns out this was down to basically one big podcaster
morbid.
Leaving.
Morbid.
Yeah, morbid. And that's a bit of a worry for me, like I said at the times. And when you get one big podcaster leaving your platform, it knocks your figures that much. That's a little bit of a worry. And also, the podcaster area is quite competitive. There's quite a few players in it, you know. And I think there's only ever going to be room for top three, maybe top two. So
They are a big platform.
I'm just thinking, can they compete? I mean, because the margins, they're literally non-existent. I mean, they started making a loss, like I said, last half. Even now, the margins, where are they? Efficiency, like even gross margins of 19% for digital business is not very big. And you've got to, it's almost like saying, if you're a podcast, a network, you have to attract big stars. And trouble is, with those big stars come big price tags.
That's true.
It knocks the margins massive. So you've got to buy in. It's like buying a football player. Good ones are very expensive. And so either you generate organic growth from a podcast, which is very hard to do to have a massive hit, or you have to buy in talent. And they're quite costly. I used to love Audioboom. I was really into it. I told you years back, so the podcast was going to take off. And I got out and literally 10 bagged. I don't know, three companies.
The reverse Justin indicator.
Literally.
What have you sold this week?
No, exactly. But at levels at now, what's the market cap here on Audioboom? They are doing, so the revenue last year was, let's go back to the figures here. So the revenue is 74 million, 75 million. On a revenue sales basis, they're not expensive. But trouble is, because their margins are so low, they're not that cheap, or even on a PE or EBITDA.
They need a hit, don't they?
Yeah,
really, they have got a big network. They attract a lot of traffic.
Yeah, they need to also reduce, in some way, improve their margins in some way. But as I said, that's just indicative of how competitive that market is. But I'd say if it can break out above that 230 level, maybe you've got a bit of running hands down there. But it's odd. The CEO and Michael Tobin. Michael Tobin is obviously the chairman who's been buying lots of shares all the way down. If you look at this, look at that director shareholding all the way down this news there. It's pretty much, you'll see his director shareholding. But Stuart Lars, the CEO, has bought in some recently. And you can see now him punching stuff out on Twitter. This is an RNS reach, which just means it's a bit of promotion, really, for the company. It's not an RNS. So, technically, it's hard to put the value on this, but it could rally technically. If it goes above this level, maybe it will.
Really, you should value a company based on its profits. How much profit is expected to generate. So when are we expecting break even? We are expecting break even this year.
It's priced in. But I mean, if I invest in companies only generate profit, I wouldn't make half the money I'd make.
That's true. But sometimes you've got in before there's profit and you can make that big rise. But then, reality will catch up at some point if those profits never materialise,
Ocado is my favourite
go-to bugbear stock for the lack of profits.
So, in fact, Red X is one of the rises. Ethernet, that's rising on no news. Long Life, no news. No news, but they're both rising. Vast is up a little bit. So, there was a loser here. Oh, yeah.
Fulcrum.
This is telling, actually. They did say that they're going to delist. They did the final results and delist because of the costs associated, the fact they can't probably raise money and all that stuff. And so they're delisting because, of course, it costs money and just the high regulatory burden of producing, accounts and all that. And then people say it costs them money.
I suspect they wouldn't be saying that had the business performed better than it has. The problem is they've had a quick look at this big restructuring this year. It's in a bit of a mess. You know, sales going backwards. It provides sort of utility services to development projects, and I guess a lot of his business is house building as well. So you know, you've probably got a bit of fallout from what's going on in the home construction sector. It's a horror show.
75 pence in June 2018, and now they're not even one pence. A third of one pence.
Yeah.
So that's a little worrying. Also, a read across here is quite interesting. Ferro Alloy Resources. Now, essentially, they are a vanadium producer in Kazakhstan. And they've had lots of delays. And they've all said, due to China slowing down, the prices have softened as well. So you've got a double whammy there. They've got delays in suppliers and the price softening. So that's a bit of a trading profit warning there from them. And like I said, so you see, in China, literally, I was reading a bit about China recently, and the suggestion that they will need reform in China because it's not going well. And, you know, traditionally, property is where people put their money, but now the property market is collapsing in China.
Yes.
There's people worrying where to put them. They don't want to invest any money. They don't want to spend any money. They're so scared. So you've got this economy that's supposed to reopen after COVID. People are not spending because they're scared. And so they're holding onto their cash. And so, so China. And of course, China, there's a stat. China has accounted for 41% of the world's growth in the last 10 years.
Mm.
That's twice as big as America's. And now if that slows down, that's going to be, a massive problem for the rest of the world.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, we talked before about it being a market for certain countries, in particular like Germany, and what it sells, obviously, is really an indicator of what we can expect here in terms of how the economy will perform. Yeah. It's a bit of a mess.
T-Bone has commented. I thought he was going to come up with something else. But he said, "Now then, boys, that's it." So, anything else you want to add to that, or just want to spread it over a couple of episodes? Up to you, T-Bone. Let us know, though. Anything else worth looking at, John? You've been seeing, anything? I mean, there's some business stories. I don't know if you saw this. We did cover this with Crest Nicholson, but also Rightmove as well, saying asking prices for houses has gone down.
Yeah.
And also, there's not many buyers out there, even when they reduce their house prices. So that's a bit of a worry.
Yeah, I mean, the housing market is softening.
Yeah.
So I think right, you said, asking price has fallen by 1.9%. Now you do usually do get a bit of a dip in the summer, but that's double what it usually is. And we're seeing fewer transactions as well. There's fewer listings, as it were. So the market is looking pretty, pretty shaky. The big question, of course, is, as we asked, is there going to be a crash?
Yeah.
What are Brits like talking about? The weather, football, and property.
And
there's a lot that's still supportive of the housing markets. There is a structural shortage. As I noted in my piece about Crest, the house builders are sort of pulling back on land investment.
Yeah.
Now that would suggest that the supply is going to get even tighter in the years ahead. But for the time being, it's a tough old place to be. You see a lot of buy to let landlords pulling out the market as well at the moment. First time buyers really struggling to get a deposit.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said before, you got to understand the house market is cyclical. It's a bit like oil stocks, isn't it? What's the cure for high oil prices? High oil prices. You get that. People start, spend less and the economy slowed down and all that. So it's the same with this. You get the stage where they'll start developing less, the supply will be less. And so the house prices will stay resilient pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, even going back to the great financial crash, there was rumors all the time then, will house prices crash? They never really crashed. I mean, you'd be lucky.
You lost about 20%.
Then they jumped back up next year. But then all of a sudden the house prices tend to recover very quickly, don't they? And so it's like saying, if you're going to buy a house and you get 10-20% off a house to be looking at, go for it. Because over the it's not a short-term investment, it will grow over time. And there's very few, what is it, once every 10 years maybe house prices go backwards and they start to rise again. So
times, bear in mind we're in an inflationary environment as well, so your absolute prices and the sort of real falls. If the housing market stays flat, prices stay flat, you have actually, that is essentially a real terms fall. So you might not see prices cratering, but you might see a period of, relatively little growth, which means that in real terms, vis-a-vis inflation, that you're actually seeing a much softer market.
Yeah, this is interesting, actually. It's bad news, good news, this one. Job vacancies and starting salaries fall for the first time this year amid a rate rise. So there are potential early signs the labour market is losing some of its inflationary heat in a shift that could give the Bank of England reason to pause its cycle of interest rate hikes. Data from the job search website suggests that vacancies and advertised starting salaries both fell in July for the first monthly decline for both elements this year. So that's almost, you know, bad news, good news. I mean, the Bank of England will be looking at many, I don't know what they look at, to be honest. Just pause.
Everything.
Bank of England, they don't understand. 18 months it takes to kick in the effects of what you're doing. You only just started hiking 18 months ago. So pause. You're going to damage businesses and people. I mean, they want to do that to a certain extent. But you can see here, there are early signs that things are slowing down and they're taking the hit. If you keep hiking up like that, it just, like I said, driving through the rearview mirror, looking at, you know, historic data, not what's actually happening.
Yeah.
So another one here, very interesting. Banks to snub Treasury meeting as you get oil and gas sector struggle for financing. Apparently, they've called for this meeting to have a lot of banks to come and help them raise some money for North Sea oil and gas. And apart from the big boys who can do it from current cash flows, you know, most companies need loans to develop fields and stuff if they're profit generating. But they're saying now, BNP Paribas has followed the footsteps of HSBC last year, which has committed to stopping no oil and gas financing. And so you've got this pressure, you know, no matter what you try and do to re-stimulate now the North Sea oil and gas, there's certain institutions that will not loan.
Precisely.
To that sector.
Precisely. So, that's exactly what I was referring to earlier.
Yeah.
You know, it's just these some sectors are just, you know, they're not. In the crosshairs of certain banks, they do not want the association with lending to such companies.
Yeah, yeah, and that's you know what, that's like saying earlier with, you know, that Thungela in resources, you say it's on a PE2. Doesn't matter. Even oil and gas companies now, they're probably on a PE5 or 4. They'll never get back to the PE10 because, you know, is money outflow there. Where you need to be is heading, follow the money. Where's the big money going? You find most big money now is going to renewables, all that kind of stuff. And whether you agree with renewables or not, oil and gas, or how much we need, money is coming out of oil and gas and it is going into renewables.
That's the point. That's the important point. So, you know, and this is sort of, you need to be careful of your biases in respect of this. So, you know, you might, one might say, this Russia renewables is ridiculous. You know, we should be investing in new oil and gas, blah, 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 blah. But should and what will happen are two very different things.
Yeah.
So just don't get blinded, by disagreeing with a policy, for example, into investing in something that actually, you know, real in the impact of what is happening will affect those investments.
I know there are people out there holding on to this, you know, small micro cap oil gas producers and thinking, well, this is so cheap. You know, it'll stay cheap probably now. It's not going to be on, you know, if historic PEs are multiple, we're like, you know, 7 or whatever they are now, and it's down at 3. Don't be surprised if it never gets back to 7.
If you look back over time, you'll see that, you know, that despite what's happened this year and that big recovery, you know, the long-term trend since, you know, God, whenever it was, for the oil and gas sector, for the majors, has been down.
Mm.
Mm. Tough. Yeah, it's been tough for them.
And in fact, this is Brent oil there. It did sort of have almost a technical bounce here from the lows of like $73. But we've got this area here, look, previous resistance there, and it's hit that. And it's sort of come off a little bit. So I don't know if it'll go back above that.
Yeah.
It would be bad for inflation if it did. And in fact, natural gas, I thought, was going to rally recently, break above this level, but it actually didn't, just hit that and it's rolled down a little bit. So maybe there's more worries about recession kicking in around the world, especially with China, you know, slowing down, not seeming doing anything. Okay, yeah, anything else? Any more? Did T-Bone come back to us on this? The trend is your friend, that's right. And remember that, it's hard there. That's why you should always look at a chart. Yeah, if you've done your fundamental research, always look at a chart, because if a trend is going down, it may continue down for a while, even though your fundamental call may be right. You know, it may be people else for a bit. Okay, don't forget, if you haven't subscribed and like this, share it with all your friends and family. It's a reason to get in contact with people you haven't chatted to for years. Say, have you looked at this video? It's very nice. Marvellous. Cheers, John. Speak tomorrow.
See you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.